do what I say or follow my will, and you've got to deny self. And I think that's particularly directed toward Peter by saying, you know, Peter, we all know that Peter's impetuous. Peter's all about, what Jesus is telling Peter is that you've got to remember it's not about you. You're just taking it on yourself. I mean, he is kind of harsh on Peter when he says in verse 23, get behind me, Satan. It's like, well, because he's not being mindful of the things of God, he's being mindful of the things of Peter. Well, that's not a life of denying self, because the heart's got to be empty, and that it is a life of cross-bearing, that the heart's got to endure, and it's a life of following, which means that the heart's got to obey. What Peter was not doing was he was not subjugating himself to the will of God. He was not submitting himself to the will of God. He was not following in the will of God. And so what Jesus does is he rebukes Peter, but he also gives you and I a picture of what the life of a disciple is about. Because the life of a disciple is not an easy life. I don't think that we need to, you know, not let people understand that when you become a Christian, it's not going to be an easy thing. If we give the idea that, oh, becoming a Christian is like a bed of roses and you're going to love every minute of it, we're lying to them, because that's not actually the case. And here Jesus is using this opportunity to remind the disciples and to explain to us that if you want to be a Christian, if you want to be a disciple, you've got to start with denying yourself. Because the first thing that's got to happen is that you've got to have a heart that desires, that has a emotional bond here, that you need to remember who you are and what you are, because servitude begins by knowing where you are on the plane of things, where you are in the scheme of things. And then when we become a Christian, we become a servant. Now, if you knew a servant, if you were, you know, living in the Bible times, and maybe you met a man by the name of Onesimus, who was a slave of Philemon, Onesimus would tell you, I'm a slave. You'll say, well, how do you know that? And no, Onesimus would laugh at you. He'd say, what do you mean? I know exactly what my station in life is. I'm a slave, and that's what I am. And so a servant knows that he is subjugated to his master. And so the place of a servant is clearly defined. Discipleship begins with knowing that Christ is Lord and we serve his will, and I have a desire to be a servant. One of the things that is unique about the discipleship of Jesus, it's all voluntary. The army of the Lord, it is a completely voluntary army. There's no draft, there's no oppression. It is that if you desire to come after me, means that you have made that choice, you've made that decision that, yes, I want to be part of this relationship with you, and that I'm going to empty myself to be your servant. Reminds me a lot of when I went into the Army. That's kind of the mindset that they give you, is that, you know, we use the terms about, well, those civilians. Well, what happens is when you go into the military, you are taught that you're no longer a civilian. You are now in subjugation to this order of things. And my job in the Army was correcting people who didn't understand that thing. And so when they thought that they weren't part of the Army, then we took the MCM and the manual of courts marshals, and we took them to court, and we made their life worse for them. But because the fact of the matter is, they forgot where they are. If you're going to be a disciple of Christ, you've got to desire to come after him and desire to be a servant. Peter kind of missed that point. The heart is willing to give everything over to Jesus. In Mark chapter 12 and in verse 30, what did Jesus say? And this is not new. This is something that's been around since the beginning. And he's quoting from the law of Moses, but this is the completeness of our discipleship. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, with all of your strength. That's the first commandment. So you ask, well, how much do I have to give, Lord? You got to give it all. How much do I have to, you got to love him with all of your heart. You got to love him with all of your soul. You got to love him with all of your mind and all of your strength. Not 90%, not 80%, not even 99%. This is something that when you come to Jesus, your heart is coming to him
with a full desire to say, I am in complete obedience to the will of God. That is the full measure. You cannot be a Christian without full dedication to the cause of Jesus Christ. It takes complete and whole obedience, because that's what Jesus desired. Back in Matthew chapter 26 and in verse 39, when Jesus was in the garden, what kind of dedication did he have in being a servant of his Father, or to deny himself? We're talking about denying self. Well, Jesus in the garden said three times, he said in verse 39, My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou. That's complete. Jesus didn't say, now, Father, you know, could you just make this a little easier? He said, no. Whatever you want me to do, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to suggest anything. I mean, you kind of think about it there for a moment. Jesus in the garden, you and I would probably have a lot more to say about things. We'd be pleading. Jesus just simply said, here's the deal. Father, if you can take it away, fine, but if not, thy will be done. I mean, that's the attitude of a complete obedience to the will of God, because Jesus desired to follow the will of God. And denying self begins with a heart willing to follow after Jesus and allow his word to guide my life no matter what, no matter when, no matter where. I'm going to do what God wants me to do. But it begins, you know, denying self begins with saying, okay, my heart, it's empty. My heart is void for you. I'm going to do and follow whatever your will is. And what that means in a practical sense, and it's more than just words. In James, the fourth chapter, James is talking about how that sometimes we get a little trivial about life and we're so busy, and there's nothing wrong with making plans, and no doubt you have some things maybe going on this week, we do, and I don't think there's anything wrong with having calories. That's not the point, but we should not live as if all things that are going to happen in life are going to happen. And the principle that he talks about in James, the third chapter, in verse 13, come now you who say today or tomorrow we're going to go such and such city, we're going to spend a year there, buy, sell, make a profit. Whereas you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. What is your life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. We should not trivialize that statement. Sometimes it's easy, well, you know, if the Lord wills, and we don't really mean that. When we talk about denying self, it literally means if the Lord wills. I mean, it is completely in his hand. It's not like, being a person who says, okay, well, whatever your will is, but let me tell you what that is. I'll do whatever you want me to do, but let me explain to you what you need to be doing. We do that a lot with God, you know. No. Denying self means literally, if the Lord wills, this will happen. And that happens in our life. Decisions that we make in life. It's like, well, if the Lord wills, and that's not just a casual statement. It's like we have fully put that in decision. We're looking for a job. We're looking for things to do in life and whatever kind of events go on in life. We literally are denying self and saying, you know, it is your will. Whatever it is that it's going to be done, it is in your hand. And leave it there. Did you notice that Jesus in the garden, when he prayed to the Father, he left it with him? Now, he went three times, but he left it with him and said, your will be done. And then he got up and told his disciples, let's go, the betrayers are here. And then he went and died. But the heart has got to desire. It's got to be a spirit of desire to come after Jesus. But then the second thing that has to happen is the heart must be willing to empty self-will. It's one thing to desire something, but the second part of that that Jesus says is that you've got to be willing to take your self-will and remove it and let your heart be completely devoted to God. Self-denial begins by denying self. That's not easy to do. I kind of like self, don't you? I like my me. I'm kind of proud of my me and all that I've been able. You know, myself is kind of an exciting person. But me likes to be in charge of me, but I can't let me be in charge of me if I want to be a disciple of Christ. I've got to let Jesus My heart has got to be willing to empty myself. The actual word denial, I thought this was interesting, means to declare something to be untrue. Wait a minute. What that means is that my will, is not true. That's not what I'm going to base my life on. It means to refuse to admit or acknowledge something. Okay, so I'm going to refuse and to admit or to acknowledge my self-will. Yeah, that's right. It's no longer I that live, but he that lives. The state that one refuses to admit the truth or existence of. In other words, I don't know what I need to do. It is not a man that walketh the directions of his own footsteps, you remember. And so self-denial is this idea of removing that will in my life. The actual Greek word of denying self actually means to disown a person. Wow, that's hard. I have to disown myself. You can't do that. I mean, you could. I have to deny and disown my own self. And it's the same word, actually. Go back to Matthew 26. You may still be there. But in Matthew 26, you remember what Jesus told Peter, you know, was going to happen? And Peter said, no, that is not going to happen. Go down to Matthew 20, 69. Yeah, I could look on my notes. I'd probably see it. In Matthew 26 and verse 69, Peter sat outside in the courtyard. A servant girl came to him saying, you also were Jesus of Galilee, but he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you're saying. It's the same word. And when he had gone out to the gateway, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, this fellow also is with Jesus of Nazareth. But again, he denied with an oath. Same word. I do not know the man. A little later, those who stood by came up and said to Peter, surely you're also one of them, for your speech betrays you. He began to curse and to swear and say, I don't know the man. Well, don't do the cursing and the swearing, but that's denial. Peter is denying the Lord. Well, that's the same sense in which we have to deny ourselves. It's kind of a weird way to look at that, but it is to forsake or to abrogate or to renounce ourselves. What Peter was doing was wrong because he was denouncing the wrong person. But in that context, that's what we've got to do. We've got to stand before the world and denounce ourselves and say, it is not me. Galatians chapter 2, Paul uses a figure that we'll come to in just a moment from the words of Jesus. But Paul reminds those that he writes to of what he had done personally with himself. Galatians 2 and verse 20, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. That is the definition of self-denial. We'll say a little bit more about that crucifixion thing because Jesus does in a moment. But that means that Paul is saying, I have voided myself of myself. I have renounced myself. I have denied myself. And to deny self means to say, I trust God. It's not the denial of truth. It's not neglecting myself through asceticism. It's not saying that I'm a terrible and bad person. It is simply saying, I am going to deny myself so that the law of Christ can live in me. Because what Paul says here, you'll notice that he has been crucified with who? It's Christ. He's no longer living, but who's living in him? Well, Christ is. You didn't know this. I've told some people this before, but you did not know this. And it's really kind of cool. And some of you, I know this. But if you take an x-ray of your heart, right in the middle of the heart, it is this little chair. It's about that big. And it's your throne of your heart. Did you know you had one? Is that? Yeah, she knows. Yeah, Brenda's over there. Yep, we got. There's this little throne in your heart. And whoever sits on that throne, that's who regulates your life. Do you know what the disciples' throne looks like? It is empty. Because your life has been given over to Christ. You can't sit on your own throne. We have refused to allow ourselves to be the one who's going to guide my life. And what Jesus says is that if you're going to come after me, you have to empty yourself. Completely get rid of self. Because the next part gets hard. Because the third thing that he said in our text is that you have got to take up your cross and follow me. And that's where it gets kind of hard to do. Because here is where we have an image that we're not familiar with, an image that we don't really care for much when it talks about crucifixion. But what Jesus said in our text is that if you come to me, you've got to desire, you've got to deny yourself, and you've got to take up a cross. Let me say something interesting about this statement. We said that Matthew 16, where he said, take up your cross and follow me, was in the summer of his last year. We tend to read that passage in the context of the crucifixion of Jesus. He's not been crucified yet. The 12, or would be the 11, are not standing there looking at Jesus on the cross. They're not a week or two later, a month or two later, a year or two later, reflecting upon the cross of Jesus Christ, and we've got to bear our cross like Jesus. That was nowhere in the context. And yet Jesus tells his disciples that if you're going to come after me, you're going to deny yourself, and you're going to have to take up a cross. Well, why would he tell that to these people? Well, obviously, because the idea of crucifixion was so common. They were crucifying people all the time. I mean, it's hard to imagine living in a place where you're going down the road and literally like telephone poles, there are people that are just crucified. I mean, that is just beyond our comprehension to think about. But that's the world they lived in. They did not live a sheltered life where nobody ever would have known what a crucified person was. I would suggest that most people in the Roman Empire knew very well what a crucified man looks like, because the Romans used that as a PR, excuse me, to show people, don't mess with us or we will crucify you. I was watching a program about some of the Mexican cartels. They have used the same thing. They took some of the people that, did the wrong thing, and they just nailed them to trees along the road. So when Jesus made this statement, take up a cross, they weren't doing that in the context of Jesus. They were doing that in the context of crucifixion in general, because they understood that when a person was crucified, a lot of things were happening. Their life was over. They had no choice about anything. They were humiliated, yes. They were beaten, and when they had to carry their patibulum, the cross piece, and when they had to carry their cross, they didn't have any power. They were under the authority of the executioners, and they understood clearly what this meant. When Jesus says to them on a number of occasions that you've got to take up your cross, it was an example of complete submission. And he wasn't even talking about his. They didn't know that was coming. So that's a very stark reality, that in order to be a disciple of Jesus, he says, you're going to take up a cross. And I don't know why they didn't catch that. You know, I guess it's like most of us, is that we hear things and we don't. But I read some of this, I read this sometimes, and I'm thinking, boy, nobody was listening. Now, Thomas actually was listening better than he, that's another story. But they were told that you've got to take up a cross. And you'll notice that what Jesus said is that if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross. That's possessive. And it's not, again, like we like to say, well, you know, we have our crosses to bear. That almost cheapens the very idea of what we're talking about, cross bearing. Because, you know, obviously many of you have your crosses to bear to sit there for the next 30 minutes, you know. That's not what that's talking about. And we shouldn't use that probably as easy as we do. When Jesus is talking about taking up your cross, he meant taking up the cross of subjection, of submission and serving Jesus requiring my willing heart to carry a cross that is mine and mine alone. And the thing about it is, my cross is my cross. Your cross is your cross. But folks, we all have a cross that we have to take. But not everybody carries a cross. If you don't want to be a disciple of Christ, you don't get to carry a cross. Because the discipleship is what makes the cross bearing a part of that. Now, ultimately, that will come to represent, you know, the cross of Jesus Christ. But Jesus says you've got to take up your cross, which means you're not doing it yet. And one of the reasons that I'm afraid that many people do not want to become disciples of Jesus, I ain't doing no cross thing. I mean, I will come and be a Christian, but do not ask me to be a cross bearer. Well, the problem with that is when you bear a cross, you have denied yourself. Because here again is the other aspect of that cross bearing. It's hard. It's voluntary. I mean, most people, or a lot of people, even Jesus, although, I mean, his was voluntary, but in the Roman eyes, he didn't have a choice because Pilate said, crucify him. They took him out and crucified him. Those two thieves that were crucified with him, they didn't have a choice about that. What we do is we say to the Father, we want to be a disciple. He says, okay. You desire to do that? Yes. Okay. Are you willing to deny yourself? Yes. Are you willing to volunteer yourself to be crucified? What, are you crazy? No. I mean, that's going to hurt. It's going to be a lot of pain. No. Jesus said that you've got to take up a cross, and it is something that is going to be bearing, be something that we're going to have to do voluntarily. And it is something that we're doing because we have emptied ourselves. And we have said that we are not going to allow the world to dictate our feelings. Now, we have to ask about that cross. Now, it doesn't have padding on it, and it doesn't have a wheel on it, and it doesn't have all. The cross is a sign of dying. And we have died for Jesus Christ. We've denied self. And you think, how can I do that? How can I take a cross? Well, the principle of 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13 says that no temptation has overtaken you but such as common to all men. But God will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with that temptation make a way of escape. Now, the principle of that, while it is talking about our temptations and things like that, the principle of it is no matter what you have to bear in life, God will not make your cross be heavier than you can bear. And guess what? That's good news. I get to bear a cross, and it's not going to overwhelm me, but you still got to bear a cross. And your cross is different than my cross. And that means that things go on. I was thinking about some examples of how that was, and I've always appreciated Acts 16, verse 25. You remember Paul and Silas, they had come to Philippi, and they got in trouble, and they got thrown into jail. What are they doing in Acts 16, verse 25, around midnight? Now, they're in the inner prison. I mean, they've been beaten. They've been, you know, treated roughly. The jailer didn't care who they were, threw them down in there. Probably didn't give them any water or bread, anything like that. And what are they doing? They're bearing their cross. They're denying self. They're singing and praying in jail. Why? Because they're there for the cause of Christ. And you can find multiple examples about how that is done, about what cross-bearing is. And whatever happens in life, and there's a lot of things that happen in life, and we wonder, am I going to be able to bear this? Am I going to be able to overcome this? And as I said earlier, everybody's got a different cross. I have my cross, and I know what my cross is. And you have your cross as a child of God. But the thing that has helped us get through our life is knowing that whatever cross I have to bear, God is not going to allow me to have a cross that I cannot bear, that he is going to tell me, you can do this. And even when things seem to be so completely turned around, I can look to people like Paul and Silas and say, man, they're singing in prison, and I need to have a good perspective of that. But the reality comes back to what Jesus said, that if you desire to come after me, you've got to deny yourself, and you're going to have to take up a cross. So discipleship is cross-bearing. And if you're not ready to bear a cross, you're not ready to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. Because the last thing that Jesus says is that if you desire to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And see, here's where the rubber meets the road, as we say. Denying self is to serve Jesus Christ in him alone. My will's his will, or his will, rather, is my will, I should say. Whatever he wants is what I'm going to. His word is my word. His desire is my desire. Everything about my life is forfeit for Jesus Christ. Whatever decisions, whatever I do in my life, however I go and whatever I do, it's measured by my relationship with Christ. The way I behave in Walmart. The way I act as I'm driving my car. The decisions that I have to make in my life. The kind of jobs that I do. The kind of places that I'm going to live. The kind of things that I'm going to do. The kind of friends that I'm going to have. And when life turns itself upside down, and maybe with either disease or sickness or death or things that happen, whatever it is, it still comes down to this idea that thy will be done. And if the Lord wills, it'll be done. And it's subjecting ourselves to the will of Jesus. In John, the 10th chapter, of course, the great picture that Jesus gives us about being the great shepherd, and a common scene that they were familiar with, of course, of the shepherd coming and getting his sheep. But notice the reaction of the sheep to him is that to him the doorkeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice, that's submission. He calls his own sheep by name, which means there's a relationship. Jesus knows, God knows who we are, and he leads them out. We are led by the shepherd. But verse 4, when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. That is my denying self. Sheep follow shepherds because they know that the shepherd's going to take care of them. The shepherd's going to feed them. He's going to give them to the still waters. Sheep don't like running water. He's going to take them to the green pastures. He's going to protect them. He's going to bind up their wounds because we have that relationship. And the joy of denying ourselves is that we're denying ourselves to the great shepherd, and he's going to take care of us. So what have I got to worry about? Jesus, when he was in the garden, was subjecting himself to the Father. And he believed in the power of the authority. And so he's showing us that as the shepherd, he goes before us, and we know his voice. And verse 5, we will not follow a stranger. We will flee from that voice because we don't know that voice. Why? Because I've denied myself to Jesus Christ. And so he says that if you desire to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross. But here's the big one. You got to follow me. You can't have the first three without the last one. You've got to believe and follow after what Jesus has said to do. And so we sing that song, where he leads, I will follow. Wherever, if Jesus goes right, I go right. If he goes left, I go left. Wherever Jesus goes, I go. Let's go back to our text in Matthew 16. So we've looked at the first part of this, that Jesus says that, verse 24, if anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. That's the introduction. Now for the lesson of the evening. Notice what he says next. He talks about, as he finishes his exhortation by examining, the discipleship, he says in verse 25, for whoever desires to save his life will lose it, for whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. What profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul, or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? Wow. You see, he got the lesson in verse 24. But verse 25 and 26 is the result of that. Because denying self will save my soul. Because the battle of self is, I want to do what I want to do, and I want to gain all the things in life, and I want my life to be full in this way. But you cannot save, you cannot serve two masters, as he said in the Sermon on the Mount. You can't love the world and love God at the same time. And if we are unwilling to deny self, then we're going to lose our soul. Now, we may want to gain the whole world, but Jesus says, what profit is that going to be? If you don't deny self, you're going to let self rule, and you're going to destroy yourself. Because if we want to save our life, we'll lose it. Well, that's what denial is. I have come before God and said that I'm going to lose my life for you. Because there is no comparison between gaining the world, boy, how long is that going to last? And gaining eternal life. And the reason that I can give myself to God is because of what He has promised. We should never, ever fail to appreciate, know, and believe in the promises of God. He tells us to conduct ourselves without covetousness, to be content with such things as we have. Why? Because I will never leave you, forsake you. See, this denial thing is kind of hard to do. I don't know if I want to do that. God says, you do it, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you. That's not a maybe. That is an eternal heavenly promise. And so when I'm bearing my cross and I'm having difficulties in life and things don't turn out maybe like I think they are or whatever it's going to be, and whatever happens in my life, the cross that I bear, it is because that God is there. He will never leave me. He will never forsake me. And so I can boldly say, I like that interesting comment, I'm going to boldly say, oh, the Lord is my helper. I'm not going to fear. What can man do to me? Why? Bring it on. I've got my cross. I'm following Him. I've denied myself. And I can handle this because God is not going to leave me at all. Let me close with a quote from A.W. Tozer, one of my favorite quotes. To be crucified means, first, the man on the cross is facing only one direction. Second, he's not going back. And third, he has no plans of his own. To deny self means that you're only going in one direction. That's the only place you can go. To deny self means that you are not going to turn back. To deny self means that you will not give up. To deny self means that you're going to serve God and Him alone. Whatever life brings and however life brings and whatever God has in His will for me in my life, let Him be glorified. The joy of being a disciple of Christ is allowing His will to serve my life and to guide me in the things that I need. He brings me joy. He brings me peace. He brings me comfort. And you know why? Because I submit myself to Him. The greatest expression of submission that we will ever do is when we say to Jesus, none of self, all of Thee. And that's when we find the real meaning of life. Live for Jesus. Serve His will. Let's stand as we sing.